yesterday and Friday night. Very good evening. Good day. And very encouraging. This morning, I was trying to get started getting ready and stuff and didn't feel very encouraged at the moment. So I decided just to take a few minutes and just write down, just fill out a page and write down the people that encouraged me the last couple days. And it took me a few minutes here and there. I wrote down Ben and Matt, how they encouraged me. Ben lets them sing. They were here. I wrote down Josh and the other Betas were here, encouraged me by their participation. Chloe, who's growing in her faith, was here. Wrote down my kids, who was encouraging to me by their part in it. And if I just stopped there, but Edson, Eddie were here, made my day yesterday. If I'd stopped there, I'd have been just uplifted just because of our kids at this group who were so good. Lee was here, other Trudeau kids, Leach girls were here. Don't want to leave anybody out. But just thinking about all the kids who are here, it just really was encouraging this morning. There are a lot of other people, too, who encouraged me as I thought about people this morning. Thought about Mo, who is a constant encouragement to me over the last several years. We have so many good conversations. There's no way I could name all the things that Walt and Debbie have done to bless me in the last few years since we've been here. I thought about the people who are here again, you know, about Justin and Lindsay coming up, Dobbs from Boston, who's a part of the study, Don Bunting and his wife who came, Tim Reeves and Laura who did studies with the kids yesterday, excellent studies. Got to meet Joe Glass from Connecticut, never had really known him, spent some time talking to him, really encouraging and uplifting. Scott Raceco has been such a blessing, encouraging me in evangelism lately. Kathy and Nancy and Sean Reed and the work that they're doing together, building her up, and that just, God just took time this morning and thought about all these people. And, you know, it was so encouraging. Thought about Andrea and Tom inviting his brother and his family came yesterday, never had met them before, but they were here. Sandy and Wally provided fruit, bread for everybody who was having people over. Holly and Terry Reese helped out with, and Charlotte, Nancy with the stuff out of the park. Jessica, Holly helped out with the kids and teaching classes for the little ones that were here. Randy and Denise hosted the girls, took care of a family. And again, I just wrote down names. Took time this morning and wrote down his names. If I overlooked anybody, it wasn't intentional. Okay? But I took time this morning. And when I was done with all that, I was a different person. You know? Because I took time to think about all these people who did encouraging things. And there are so many others who do things too here as well. And I thought about that because I wanted to think with you a few minutes this morning about, I was looking at this list of people, and I wondered in the New Testament, and none of us know any of those people personally. None of us ever met them. Some of them only get a single verse devoted to them. Some of them don't even get that, just the names thrown out there. Some of them, there's a little bit more information about them. But if you go through those people, there's one thing that they all shared in common in the New Testament. Is that they were all people who encouraged. Paul mentions them, takes the time to note these different people and their work. Luke notes them in his book. Christians who encouraged. And I want us to think about what a blessing that is today. What God has given us and what that should mean to us as we try to be different people in this world. And when we look at all these people, I'm not going to go through all these individuals here. Paul knew them personally. They meant something to him. And they did something for him at one time or another, or several times during his work here. And he had personal... We don't have connections with those people, but we have connections with each other. And just about any of us here could do the same thing I did this morning for a few minutes. Write down a list of people who've encouraged you, have meant something to you, have taken time to do something for you, and think about how important that was or how useful that was, their devotion to you. And wow, there's some ways that we should react to that. There's some reactions that we should have when we think about how Christians encourage us. And I'm just going to give you three things here, first of all. Number one, we need to give God thanks. We need to give God thanks. Paul did. And I'll just read one verse here in Romans chapter 8, or chapter 1 and verse 8. But it's a very repetitive thing in different letters that he wrote, that he would begin a letter often by mentioning these people, and he'd say, like in Romans 8, chapter 1 and verse 8, "First, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, because your faith is being proclaimed throughout the whole world." And he'll mention also in Philippians, he'll talk about how that group was an encouragement to him, and other letters as well. Christians can be a source of great encouragement to us. They are God's blessing to us. You know, what do we thank God for? What do you tend to thank God for in your prayers the most? The time you thank Him for your food, thank Him for your house, thank Him for your clothes, thank Him for Jesus, for our spiritual blessings. Yes. But what about individuals? What did Paul tend to thank Him for? Think about all the people who have affected your life individually, for good. Was that sheer coincidence? I don't think so. I like Philemon, the little book of Philemon that hides itself in the New Testament. There's only a few verses to it, but it was a letter Paul wrote to this man who was a member of the church in the city of Colossae. And he had an experience where a slave of Philemon ran away and somehow ended up with Paul in Rome. Paul converted him and sent him back to Philemon along with this letter. And he said, when he wrote this in verse 15 and 16, "For perhaps he was for this reason parted from you for a while, that you should have him back forever, no longer as a slave, but more than a slave, a beloved brother, especially to me, but how much more to you, both in the flesh and in the Lord." This man, Onesimus, was a blessing both to Paul and to Philemon. By sheer coincidence? I don't think so. Paul doesn't have to know all the details of how it worked out, but he sees God in the midst of this thing, working things out so this person became a blessing. How many people could you count in your life who have been a blessing to you spiritually, that God's worked that out so that they blessed you in some way? We need to give God thanks. Give God thanks for individuals who He has sent our way to be a blessing to us. I'm 48 now, so I've got a few more years that I can go back and recount different people who've entered my life at different points that's affected me in one way or another. But they have. And it's not by accident. So we need to give God thanks for what He's done for us in these blessings. We also need to remember to seek encouragement where God has put encouragement to be found. Don't look for encouragement in the wrong places. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 8, again, when Paul mentioned that a few minutes ago, he wrote a letter to this group. And he says, starting in verse 7, "As to all my affairs, Tychicus, our beloved brother and faithful servant and fellow bondservant in the Lord, will bring you information. For I have sent him to you for this very purpose, that you may know about our circumstances, and that he may encourage your hearts." Paul sent him for the purpose of encouraging these people. That's where encouragement was going to be found, when this man came and brought good news about what was happening with Paul. In 1 Thessalonians 3, verse 5 through 10, he said, "For this reason, when I could endure it no longer, I also sent to find out about your faith, for fear that the tempter might have tempted you and our labor should be in vain. But now that Timothy has come to us from you and has brought us good news of your faith and love, that you always think kindly of us, longing to see us, just as we also long to see you. For this reason, brethren, in all our distress and affliction, we were comforted about you through your faith. Now we really live if you stand firm in the Lord." Affliction, distress. You ever have that? Affliction and distress. Where do you look for comfort? Do you go buy wine coolers, try to find relaxation and comfort there? Y'all be ashamed of yourself. Where is comfort? Where is relax? Where is encouragement? It's in people. It's in the people God's given us to bless us. That's where we find comfort. That's where God, what is God has given us to bless us. We need to look. You know, it was an hour well spent this morning just thinking about people who was encouraging yesterday and the day before. Why don't I do that more often? How come? So busy, so many important things to do. Don't consume yourself with disappointments. There are plenty of those. Life's full of them. All the time. God doesn't take them away. But don't consume yourself with that. Rather, with the Lord's work in individuals. Think about character transformation. Think about repentance that you've seen. Think about people who've changed that were this way, but now they're better. Think about that. Think about the work of churches. Think about the preaching and the spreading of the gospel that's going on. Again, 1 Thessalonians chapter 1 there, in verse 3. He said, "We give thanks to God always for you." There's that thankfulness again. "Making mention of you in our prayers." Verse 3, "constantly bearing in mind your work of faith and labor of love and steadfastness of hope in the Lord Jesus Christ in the presence of our God and Father." Verse 8, "For the word of the Lord has sounded forth from you, not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place your faith toward God has gone forth." That we don't have anything that we need to say. Paul was encouraged, built up, because he thought about this church and the work that they were doing in preaching the gospel, spreading the gospel. We need to find encouragement where God has put encouragement to be found. In the service of others, extending hospitality to others. There's lots of encouragement to be found in doing that. Paul remembers fondly times that he was in the homes of Aquila and Priscilla, taking care of him, or when he went to Lydia's house and she took care of him and Barnabas, Silas, after they had been imprisoned in Philippi. He remembers those times, remembers those people who had extended hospitality and showed him kindness in his hour of need. Seek encouragement where God's put it. And then, not only that, we need to acknowledge them. We need to acknowledge them. 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Sometimes we don't take time to acknowledge the people who have done wonderful things for us. Paul remembers, writes a letter to the Corinthians. In verse 15, he says, verse 16, beginning in verse 17. "I rejoice over the coming of Stephanas, Fortunatus, and Achaicus. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. Don't know that guy. Don't know. Paul did. He never mispronounced his name, probably. "Because they've supplied what was lacking on your part. for they refresh my spirit and yours. Therefore, acknowledge such men. Interesting that Paul was very comfortable openly acknowledging those who encouraged him. I don't do that very much. Probably to my fault. And what I want to point out is none of these people were perfect. They were perfect people. But it wasn't absolute perfection he was looking for. He was looking for faithfulness. Sometimes I can be terribly critical, and I can see all the flaws in people, and I can just name them. You know what? And God, that's not God. Not that they don't have flaws. It's not what He's looking for. He sees the good side of people. He sees what they do right, that they're faithful, and all the good that they do. Acknowledge those people. When Paul saw it, he wanted it told. Why? Because they were a source of great joy, given by God for encouragement, both to the person doing it and to the ones who hear it, and then the people that know about them. I tell you, when you go on a trip, I go somewhere and go to Indiana and visit family, and I know somebody that's going to be coming to Boston or something. I say, oh, you've got to meet this couple. You've got to know. You've got to make sure when you're there at Kingsbury, you talk to these people. I don't know who to tell them because there's so many people. But you know, you got to meet these guys. They're great. Boy, they'll encourage you. You'll walk away and you'll have a smile on your face. You know, this is a faithful. And you want to tell a story about it. Maybe something they did for you or something they did for somebody else. Tell about the good things that the Lord is doing through people. I used to read Reader's Digest some when I was younger. I don't do that anymore, but when I was 12, 13 or whatever, I always liked to pick those up when I was in the doctor's office. Because I had all these fun stories. You know, the stories, good stories, people overcoming, some kind of simple person who acts very courageously and does something that's heroic. And you know, I like to read those stories. Kind of warm your heart, heartwarming stories. Well, we kind of dismiss those things, don't we, as we get older. See, sentimentality, read those sentimental kind of things, you know. We all love to hear good stories, especially about Christians doing good things for other people. And we all want to tell stories about the good things that other faithful people, Christians, are doing when we hear those stories, or when we see those stories, or somebody overcoming, or someone who's faithful in the midst of adversity. There's some kind of service, hospitality that someone is extending, or courageous acts. We have lots of stories, even among us, if we pay attention and we don't dismiss them as insignificant or take them for granted. There's lots of good stories. So our reaction is that we should give God thanks for the Christians that encourage us, that we should seek encouragement where God has given encouragement to be found, and not in superfluous, silly things in this world that don't last. And we need to acknowledge people that do good things for us and be grateful for those things. Our responsibility is that we need to be an encourager. There's different ways we can be encouragers ourselves. Not only there are Christians who've done things for us, but we need to be encouragers. We can encourage others through service, by doing good deeds. I think it's interesting in Acts chapter 9. That Luke, who wrote this book, told the story about the lady named Dorcas who had passed away and who Peter came and raised her from the dead. It's amazing. You know, if you want to rank all the stories in the New Testament and which ones were the most important, you might wonder if this was one that should have been put in there. You know, it's not some great tale of Paul's fabulous journey to some city to preach and getting stoned and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not some, you know, it's about a simple lady lived in a city, and she was a person who just blessed other people, did what she could with the talent she had. Verse 36, a certain disciple named Tabitha, which translated in Greek as Dorcas, this woman was abounding with deeds of kindness and charity. There's how you can be an encourager, abound with deeds of kindness and charity, which she continually did. And it came about at that time. She fell sick. She died. When they'd washed her body, they laid it in the upper room. And then since Lydda was near Joppa, the disciples, having heard that Peter was there, sent two men to him and entreated him, "Don't delay, come to us." I wonder why they did that. You know, I mean, lots of Christians died. Why would they call Peter? I mean, wasn't there more important things? You know, somebody dies, they die. But Peter arose and he went to them, and when he had come, they brought him into the upper room, and all the widows stood beside him weeping and showing all the tunics and garments that Dorcas used to make while she was with him. Think of the impact this woman had made on that group of people. May not know her ourselves, but they meant something. She meant something to them enough that they sent to another city to find an apostle to get him to come. Maybe he'll do something, because we don't want to lose her. And so he comes. They're showing him all the good deeds and things that she had done. Peter sends him out, kneels down, prays, turns to the body and says, "Tabitha, arise." And she opens her eyes, and then she raises her from the dead and presents her back to these people. And it led to people believing on the Lord. It's impressive. Good deeds, doing good deeds. You know, God values that. He valued it enough to write this story in the New Testament for us to remember this particular lady. Hospitality, God values that. 1 Peter chapter 4, just any kind of number of passages we could turn to talk about the significance of that, what God, how He values that. Chapter 4, verse 9 and 10, "Be hospitable to one another without complaint. As each one has received a special gift, employ it in serving one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God." God's entrusted us as stewards with the things that we have, and here's the person who should use what God's given him to be a blessing to other people. God values that. He puts His stamp of approval on that. You can be an encourager through words as well, not only through our service, but through words. Look in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. The person who is down, the person who is whose faith is waning, who's barely hanging on by a thread, you know that. Regardless of why, whether it's their own fault, things that they're doing, or things that's happened to them, what can you be to them? What do they need from you? Well, he says in verse 14, "We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, and be patient with all men." So you can pick up the phone or write a letter and write a note. Go and visit them. I can't tell you how many notes has come to our house from different members here that just came at the right time. Just uplift, you know, you read that, you've got to read this. Somebody wrote this to us. It's great. Really makes a difference. You know, little things that mean a lot. But encourage those who are faint-hearted, those who's they've lost that spirit of, you know, joy, or they've lost that determination right now. They need somebody to write them a note. Go and see them, visit them, encourage them, pick up the phone, give them something, take them with them to go do something. You may even encourage somebody through admonishment. Same passage, right? "And we urge you, brethren, to admonish the unruly." Sometimes there are people who are not behaving like they ought to in a group. We do well sometimes, and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we're on our game, and sometimes we drop the ball, and we begin behaving more like the world than we do like we ought to. He says, admonish, spur on those who are not doing well to resist maybe some sin or to do good that they should be doing. Hebrews chapter 3, that was very necessary. Evidently, in that letter, it's mentioned a number of times. But these people are under a lot of duress. There's persecution. These Jewish Christians are struggling. They're being persecuted. It's a time when you sometimes drop the ball, when you're under a lot of affliction and hardship. You're not being all that you could be. You tend to go back and move back towards sinfulness. He says in verse 13 of chapter 3, "Encourage one another day by day, as long as it's still called today, lest any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin." You're not hardened yet. He's not hardened. But he's falling into sin. So go and get him. Go and help him. Get him before he gets to the point where he's so hardened that he can't turn around and come back. Chapter 10, verse 24 and 25, he seems to come back to the same idea. And he points to assemblies like this one as your opportunity to encourage one another. Let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encourage one another all the more as you see the day drawing near. People say, why do we have to come on Sunday night? Why would you ask why? If you want to know why, here's why. Because it's an opportunity to encourage each other and be encouraged. That's the motive, not because it's some kind of ritual. It's because it's an opportunity to be together and encourage each other. Where else could you be that'd be more beneficial than with the saints? Where you could be a blessing to somebody else, or maybe somebody could be a strength in you when you're under going through difficult times. Spur one another on. Admonish one another. Discipline is a form of strengthening too. Hard to see that. Chapter 12 of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11 to 15. By faith, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11 to 15. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. And yet, it says, to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. The person who is the child who is disciplined repeatedly, when they get out of line, eventually they learn how to correct it and they stay in line. You get them to build a habit of keeping them in line. And, and then the benefit comes. Not at the beginning. Nobody likes the discipline at the beginning, but eventually it becomes a way of life that they're grateful for it, and it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. And make straight, he said, verse 12, strengthen the hands that are weak and the knees that are feeble. Make straight paths for your feet, that the limb which is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. But he's using the figure to see a part of the body that's obviously not in good condition, out of joint, not what it ought to be. And you see that. And he says, you go and help that. Do the work. You ever had a shoulder put back in place that's been pulled out of socket? Man, that hurts. You ever had somebody grab your finger when it's dislocated and yank it and put it back? That hurts. But you know what? When it's done, it sure feels a lot better. All that kind of putting the limb that's out of socket back in joint is painful for the moment, but the person that administers it's got a good goal in mind. It's got a good end. And that's the whole idea. It's a body, and we try to get each other, help encourage each other, strengthen one another, help those that are weak, so that, verse 15, no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up that causes trouble, and by it many be defiled, that there's no immoral or godless person like Esau who sold his own birthright in a single meal. He said, don't let that happen. Don't let somebody end up there. Help bring them back. Restore them. Use the discipline as God advised it in order to achieve His end of saving them. And it encourages. And it says in its message, the underlying message of all that is, I love you. I really care about you. And that's encouraging. That guy cared enough about me to come and help me. Even if it didn't feel too good when they came and tried to help me, he really had a good intention. I know he did. That's what his goal is, to help me go to heaven. The underlying message of love. You find that here, in here. You don't find it out there. You find it here. That's what Christians are to encourage. And encourage each other. We can encourage each other also in our own trials. Our attitude towards our difficulties affects other people. I always like Paul's attitude in Philippians chapter 1. Our attitude in the midst of our trials affects other people for good or bad. But when Paul was writing this letter, he was in jail, in prison in Rome, most likely. And he writes this letter to the Philippians. And things couldn't have been comfortable, convenient, difficult. Paul was about to be on trial, about to face the Caesar, didn't have any absolute knowledge whether or not he was going to be set free or whether he would die. But he writes this letter and he says, I want you to know, my brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and everyone else. And most of the brethren trusting in the Lord because of my imprisonment have far more courage to speak the word of God without fear. So his attitude toward his difficulties made quite an impact on the church in Philippi. They would have seen what that affliction, that difficult circumstance that Paul had been dealt, had turned out for good. What do I do with the circumstances that God allows me to be placed in? And as I communicate to other people about those circumstances, I can still be an encourager, even in my trials. Now, that doesn't mean we don't need comfort in prayers of others. Paul was not he was not some kind of guy who pretended like he didn't have hard times. You ever meet somebody like that? They're going through it. You know they're going through it. But they won't say, you know, things are really hard, and I could sure use your prayers. Because their pride says, I can't let anybody know. I got to put on a face and pretend like everything's perfect and I can weather any storm. That's not what Paul was. He didn't pretend to be like that. He writes in this letter, 2 Corinthians, verse 1, we don't want you to be unaware, brethren, of our affliction, which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened excessively beyond our strength, so that we despaired even of life. Indeed, we had the sentence of death within ourselves, in order that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead, who delivered us from a great peril of death, and will deliver us, he on whom we have set our hope. And he will deliver us. You also, verse 11, joining and helping us through your prayers, that thanks may be given by many persons on our behalf for the favor bestowed upon us through the prayers of many. He requested prayers in hard times. I could multiply the passages and look in Romans or Ephesians and other places where he asked for people to pray for him. But he didn't communicate a despairing attitude in the midst of his trials. There was a joy in his service. He was glad that he had an opportunity to be where he was, because there was opportunity for God to accomplish his ends and his purposes through Paul's work, even when it was painful for him personally. And so he remembers that, but he encouraged others even in the midst of his trials. So our responsibility is to be an encourager even in the midst of our trials. So that's the lesson. Christians can encourage you, and we need to be that receive the encouragement that Paul has, or that God has offered us in this group, but also we need to make ourselves encouragers of one another, and we can build one another. Christians are God's source of encouragement to us. Now tonight, the sister lesson to this is that Christians might also disappoint you sometimes. So, probably shouldn't have told you that. I'm going to lose my audience for tonight. But there's a balance. And not preaching the balance is sometimes detrimental too. So, come back tonight. Study for a few more minutes. Give your song books, number 628. It's the final song. Nope, 473. Nope. Wait a minute. Which book did I bring up here? It's not the one that... Which one was it?
268.
Okay. I must have brought the wrong book with me. 268. Hark the Gentle Voice of Jesus Calling. That's the one. We're going to sing that. Listen to the voice of Jesus calling you to become a Christian. If you haven't done that, this is your opportunity. So why don't we stand and sing our song now.